I don't exist. So they're all characters that I played, including Jim Carrey, including Joel Barish, including any of those things. They're all characters. Jim Carrey was a less intentional character because I thought I was just building something that people would like, but it was a character. I played the guy that was free from concern so that people who watched me would be free from concern, you know? And then at a certain point you go like, okay, well, that's great. But you know, it's like the one thing, like people talk about depression all the time. The difference between depression and sadness is just, you know, from happenstance, whatever happened or didn't happen for you, or, you know, grief or whatever it is. And depression is your body saying, fuck you, I don't want to be this character anymore. I don't want to hold up this avatar that you've created in the world. It's too much for me,
right.
You know?
Do you know about alchemical, sexual alchemy?
Sexual alchemy.
Yeah.
I know alchemy.
Talking about Tantra.
I made a lot of money on alchemy in the early 70s.
Do you know that the story of Jesus, how it's been altered in certain ways? I mean, yes, there was a guy, yes, there was teachings, all that stuff. But the parallel between that and alchemical sex is that...
I'm sorry, alchemical sex?
What is it?
Chemical. Yes,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Alchemy, sexual yes. Alchemy is there's 33 vertebrates in your spine. There's 33 years in the life of Jesus
Christ. Yeah.
So this substance comes from your medulla, makes the trip down your spine to your sacrum, which is Christ coming down into human form.
Yes.
And if you don't squander that essence, that sexual essence, it ascends again and goes back up to heaven. Which is your thing. It's also the story of Santa Claus. Why he comes down the chimney is because this juice or this whatever substance actually passes what's called the claustrum, which is where they got Santa Claus. Uh-huh. So it goes down
what
the chimney
the
and back
fuck?
Up the chimney. Substance that comes from your medulla, which is basically completely looks like the Ark of the Covenant. Has angels' wings around it, the whole thing. Your medulla is shaped.
Now, so you believe without a doubt if Jesus had existed in the form that
I believe
given,
that he was
a sexual being?
No, I didn't say that.
Oh.
I think he probably saved it, you know, so that he could be clear, so that he could be sharp.
Did you know that the zombie apocalypse has occurred? This is
no.
What people are mistaken about. There's all people talking about the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah?
You're the fucking zombies.
Oh, the cell phone zombies.
This is the fucking zombie.
Are we the
apocalypse,
zombies,
man.
Yeah.
Wait, are you?
I am too. Yeah. I'm one of the fucking zombies, man.
Back in 1989, the shot schedule was 10 shots given.
10 shots given.
When I was a kid, what do we get? 3?
It's twice as many as anywhere else in 30 countries in the Western world.
But
we give twice as many shots as any of those countries. Why is that?
You should educate yourself. We want to empower parents to educate themselves. Do we need to have the chickenpox? Do we need the hepatitis B shot on the second day of life?
I don't think we can afford to assume that the people who are charged with our public health any longer have our best interests at heart all the time. Parents have to make their own decisions, educated decisions.
When the other doctors are here, and they will be on the other side in a while after you leave.
Grab them and stab them, you mean?
That was one.
This is my nickname.
Well, what will they say? Why would a doctor not want to know more about something that could save a life or prevent a disease? I don't understand.
The AAP is financed by the drug companies. Medical schools are financed by the drug companies. This is a huge business. Vaccines are the largest growing division of the pharmaceutical industry. $13 billion.
They control
profit.
Medical schools. These doctors are not learning about prevention or vitamins or diet.
What we're asking is for them to take a loss for the good of our children. That's a tough sell in a boardroom.
Interesting that you're going to play a politician, but you kind of hate politics.
I don't hate politics at all.
You don't vote.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just... What's the best way? What's the best way of putting this without saying?
A hate for politics.
No, it's not a hate for politics. It's like, I don't remember a time when people were happy.
in this country, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, no, I can't get off. When I feel like somebody is representing me and I look and say, okay, I'm voting for him because he's going to do something for me, really for me, mm-hmm. then I'll vote. But if it's a question of like, well, I know I'm going to have a foot in my ass, who got the smallest feet? Size Perot guy. Yeah, I know George Bush wears some 13 triple E. You know, I'm not going all into that.
When you look at Clinton, Bush, and Perot, do you see anybody you have an interest in voting for?
Hey, man, I say my prayers, and I'm a spiritual person, mm-hmm. and I'm going to let God settle all this craziness and all this.
But we can't all do that,
yeah,
Eddie.
Yeah, but that's what I'm doing, man. You know, I'm not, that's what I'm doing. I think it's a higher power than government. I think it's a higher power than all of those things. And I've been let down personally. You feel let down, and you feel like you're a victim. I've had all that stuff in my life, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm down with that higher power. I give my vote.
But isn't that kind of like being a slave on the plantation and just singing and saying, Lord will make a way?
How you figure?
Just sing. And look, Lord will make a way instead of whipping some ass or voting.
But what's that gonna accomplish by whipping some ass and voting?
It will accomplish more than just praying. I think prayer must be accompanied by some kind of action.
Oh, but see, that's if you... you feel that the government is doing things for you. You feel like the government is helping you out and doing things for you and has your best interest in hand.
That's why I'm gonna vote, because I believe.
But have you ever felt like that? Have you ever felt like that?
I'll just keep voting until I find somebody who has my interest.
Wait now. But who's tripping then? If you just going down in the booth and pulling this lever and I'm singing, who's tripping? Who's to say what happens when you go pull a lever and they say, oh yeah, we counted the votes and it's this. Who knows what goes on, man? Chief, you have nothing to do with any of it. Any of it. It's some cats that run this thing. I'm not doing this. And a lot of people are going to say, oh, he's crazy and rock the vote and all that. There are a bunch of cats that run this planet, and they just wait on the higher power to handle things. I mean, read your Bible. Read your Bible. I read Revelations. They ain't say nothing about, and thou shalt rock the vote. rock thine right to vote.
I think that's satirically sound, but I really think you got to rethink that concept.
To every American who's terrified that Crooked Joe's weakness will cause catastrophic global conflict, excuse me, it already is. I make this promise to you as president. I will restore peace through strength, and we will stop World War III. We will not have World War III. And I know all the players. I know them all. I know them all. Because it was Joe Biden with his weakness and what he did with Iran and others that caused the attack on Israel. That's very simple. They would have never attacked Israel. Never. Russia would have never attacked Ukraine. You wouldn't have inflation. You wouldn't have any inflation right now. It was energy that went up like skyrocketed. He stopped it. Just no more. Let's have everything. Thank you. Unlike Joe Biden, I will stand with our friend and ally, the state of Israel, 100%. We'll stand with them 100%. And unlike Crooked Joe, I will fully support Israel's mission of ensuring that the terrorist group Hamas is defeated, dismantled, and permanently destroyed. They have to destroy them.
I'm deeply saddened and outraged by the explosion at the hospital in Gaza yesterday. And based on what I've seen, it appears as though it was done by the other team, not you. But there's a lot of people out there not sure. So we've got to overcome a lot of things.
Pope Francis had a 20-minute phone call with U.S. President Biden this weekend. It was the Pope who requested the call. And according to the White House, the two spoke about the latest developments in Israel and Gaza. They also discussed President Biden's recent trip to Israel and the need to work towards peace in the Middle East. The Pope and President Biden have met in person on multiple occasions, most recently in 2021. But this phone call comes just 3 months after Cardinal Zuppi met with Biden at the White House on behalf of the Pope. On this occasion, Cardinal Zuppi and the President also discussed peace, but specifically between Russia and Ukraine.
The President of the World Jewish Congress, Ronald Lauder, met with Pope Francis at the Apostolic Palace in light of the growing conflict in the Middle East. The Congress reported that the President asked the Pope to use his authority as a religious leader to petition for the safe return of the hostages taken to Gaza. Lauder described Pope Francis as, quote, the only person who has the moral authority to do this. This is not the first time the Pope met with the President and other members of the Congress. Last November, he spoke to the group about the responsibility Catholics and Jews have in order to achieve peace in the world. This year's meeting between the Pope and President also inaugurated the World Jewish Congress's representative office to the Holy See, the first ever Jewish liaison office on Vatican soil.
It's been white phosphor again used. We filmed.
Very operating in very dangerous, very difficult circumstances. Rishi Abu Alouf doing his very best.
This is what a white phosphorus bomb explosion looks like. The plumes of smoke, when inhaled, cause sudden scarring of lungs, suffocate people to death, and melt flesh just like the napalm bomb. White phosphorus is a colorless or yellowish, translucent, wax-like substance that smells a bit like garlic and ignites on contact with oxygen. When used, it's characterized by a loud bang and a plume of bright white smoke. It can stay dormant in the ground, but exposure to air causes it to ignite immediately. Under the Chemical Weapons Convention, white phosphorus is not considered a chemical weapon, and is thus used on battlefields to make smoke screens, generate illumination, mark targets, or burn bunkers and buildings. But it is illegal to use it as an incendiary weapon in war zones and in heavily populated civilian areas. It burns fiercely and can inflict horrific injuries, kill and burn to the bone, and its usage constitutes a war crime. White phosphorus bombs were called Willy Pete and were used during World War I and World War II. The Pentagon acknowledged the use of white phosphorus munitions in the Iraqi city of Fallujah in 2004. In 2008-2009, it was used by Israel on civilian areas during its recurring military campaigns in Gaza. And now, amid the recent escalation of tensions between Hamas and Israel starting on October 7, 2023, Palestine has accused Israel of using illegal phosphorus incendiary weapons while bombing populated areas in Palestine's Gaza.
من المسؤولين الاسرائيليين خلال الايام الماضيه
ما انت مدبح
رجع انا بشدور
بس ما انت بشدور
كما
ما انت
مدبح
ما انت مدبح ما انا نوتي ما انت بشدور
ها مدبح ما عمر دوفر צל
ما عمر دوفر צל كبي מאוד שאתם אומרים דברים טובים הבנת אותי מקווה מאוד שאתם אומרים דברים טובים ואתם וכל החמאס האלה צריכים לשחוט אותם הבנת אותי
בסדר
אתם לא תדווחו את האמת
אני נרى على الان لمراسلنا احمد راوشه خلال مشاركته معنا على الهواء من أسدود ما الذي كان يقوله لك أحمد
عناصر من الشرطة الإسرائيلية يحاولون أو يراقبون ما الذي نتحدث وخرج مرة واحدة للصراخ بهذه الطريقة وللتهديد بطبيعة الحال
تهديد جديد للطواقم الصحفية كما نرى على الشاشة عنصر من الشرطة الإسرائيلية يتدخل أثناء مشاركة زميلنا أحمد روشة معنا على الهواء من أسدود ليس هذا بالطبع هو التدخل
طبعا هو مسلح يحمل مسدس
Are you concerned though Iran gets a nuclear weapon about them getting a nuclear weapon?
Well, we are concerned of any country getting a nuclear weapon. That's a bad move. And you don't need to get a nuclear weapon because you cannot use it. Even if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, any country use a nuclear weapon, that means they are having a war with the rest of the world. The world cannot see another Hiroshima. If the world see 100,000 people dead, that means you are in a war with the rest of the world. So it's a useless effort to reach a nuclear weapon, because you cannot use it. If you use it, you got to have a big fight with the rest of the world.
If they get one, will you?
If they get one, we have to get one.
And how concerned are you about Iran trying to escalate this war?
We are concerned. In fact, we expect that there's a likelihood of escalation by Iranian proxies directed against our forces, directed against our personnel. We are taking steps to make sure that we can effectively defend our people and respond decisively if we need to.
Israel's intelligence services are lauded around the world, and the U.S. relies on them to be eyes and ears in the region. ABC's Matt Gutman joins us now from outside defense headquarters. Matt, in the midst of the mourning there, we have to imagine Israelis are wondering what's next and whether there were warning signs missed.
Well, discussing that tonight and the response in Gaza was Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, his cabinet, his generals in that defense complex. But as you mentioned, so many Israelis wondering how their vaunted intelligence agencies seem to miss so many warning signs. We know that there were hundreds of Hamas operatives involved in this massive attack. We know that they likely knew about this for months. How were those warning signs missed? And as shocking to many Israelis is how slow the military response was. One man told me he was holed up in his bomb shelter for 7 hours. His father drove in from Tel Aviv to come rescue him. And many tonight are pointing the finger at Benjamin Netanyahu, who formed that far right wing government and sowed so much division in Israel. For so many Israelis, they tell me it seems that all systems here broke down everywhere all at once.
Well, we're expecting to hear from the prime minister shortly, sometime at the top of the hour, according to his office. Letting us know just about an hour ago that he was going to speak. In the meantime, his office has released a statement strongly denying these reports that Egypt had warned Israel that there was some sort of attack in the works days ago, and that warning was effectively ignored. In the statement, the office calls it absolutely false, saying that no message in advance has arrived from Egypt, and the prime minister had neither spoken nor met with the head of Egyptian intelligence since the formation of his government. So a very strong pushback to those reports that the government, in fact, did have a warning. The Israeli government is saying not so.
Just a part of the question on the issues of refugees coming to Jordan, and I think I can quite strongly speak on behalf not only of Jordan as a nation, but of our friends in Egypt. That is a red line, because I think that is the plan by certain of the usual suspects to try and create de facto issues on the ground. No refugees in Jordan, no refugees in Egypt.
Allahu Akbar.
we should be doing three things. One, support Israel, whatever they need, whenever they need it, no questions asked. Two, eliminate Hamas. Don't weaken them, eliminate them, because if we don't, they will do this again. And three, do whatever it takes to get our hostages home. But see the bigger picture of all of this. There would be no Hamas without Iran. And look at what the bigger story of this all is. You have China and Russia name themselves unlimited partners. Iran is their junior partner. Iran, China is importing all of its oil from Iran, sending billions of dollars their way that they support terrorism with. Russia's getting drones and missiles from Iran. Look at the three. What do they all have in common? They all want to destroy the West and they all hate America.
What is the top obstacle to peaceful coexistence of Israelis and Palestinians? Let's talk about the big question of peace in this part of the world. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the reason you have the persistence of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, which goes back about a century, is the persistent Palestinian refusal to recognize a Jewish state, a nation state for the Jewish people in any boundary. That's why they opposed the establishment of the state of Israel before we had a state, and that's why they've opposed it after we had a state. They opposed it when we didn't have Judea and Samaria, the West Bank in our heads, and Gaza, and they oppose it after we have it. Doesn't make a difference. It's basically their persistent refusal to recognize a Jewish state in any boundaries. And I think their tragedy is that they've been commandeered for a century by leadership that refused to compromise with the idea of Zionism, namely that the Jews deserve a state in this part of the world. The territorial dispute is something else. You have a territorial dispute if you say, okay, you're living on this side, we're living on that side, let's decide where the border is, and so on. That's not what the argument is. The Palestinian society, which is itself fragmented, but all the factions agree there shouldn't be a Jewish state anywhere, okay? They just disagree between Hamas that says, oh, well, you should have it, you know, we should get rid of it with terror, and the others who say, well, no, we should also use political means to dissolve it. So that is the problem.
So even as part of a two-state solution, they're still against the idea.
Israel's foreign ministry released a statement calling for the Vatican to issue a clear condemnation of the acts perpetrated onto Jews and Israelis by the Hamas terrorist group. This statement came shortly after Pope Francis's Sunday Angelus. Israel's Minister of Foreign Affairs had a phone call with Archbishop Gallagher, the Vatican Secretary for Relations with States, about his displeasure with the Pope's words. According to the statement, during the phone call, the minister emphasized that it is inconceivable that an announcement essentially expressing concern for the residents of Gaza is issued at the same time Israel is burying 1,300 murdered citizens. This statement from Israel's foreign ministry comes just 2 days after the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, visited the embassy of Israel to the Holy See to express his concern for the citizens of Israel. He also had a phone call with the Prime Minister of Palestine. Cardinal Parolin said the Vatican remains firm in their stance that a two-state solution is the only way to ensure lasting peace, and that, as always, the Vatican is ready for any necessary mediation in the conflict.
Well, they don't want a state next to Israel. They want a state instead of Israel. And they say, if we get a state, we'll use it as a springboard to destroy the smaller Israeli state, which is what happened when Israel unilaterally walked out of Gaza and effectively established a Hamas state there. They didn't say, oh, good, now we have our own territory, our own state. Israel is no longer there. Let's build peace. Let's build, economic projects. Let's enfranchise our people. No, they turned it into a terror bastion from which they fired 10,000 rockets into Israel. When Israel left Lebanon, because we had terrorist attacks from there, then we had Lebanon taken over by Hezbollah, a terrorist organization that seeks to destroy Israel. And therefore, every time we just walked out, what we got was not peace. We didn't give, territory for peace. We got territory for terror. That's what we had. And that's what would happen as long as the reigning ideology says we don't want Israel in any border. So the idea of two states assumes that you'd have, on the other side, a state that wants to live in peace and not one that will be overtaken by Iran and its proxies in 2 seconds and become a base to destroy Israel. And therefore, I think that most Israelis today, if you ask them, they'd say it's not going to work in that concept. So what do you do? What do you do with the Palestinians? Okay, they're still there, and I don't, unlike them, I don't want to throw them out. They're going to be living here, and we're going to be living here. Everything is becoming technologized, and in Israel, everybody is dealing in everything, and that's a potent reservoir of talent that the world is not going to pass up, and in fact, is coming to us. We just had NVIDIA coming here, they decided to build a supercomputer in Israel. Wonder why. We've had Intel coming here and deciding now to invest $25 billion just now in a new plant in Israel. I wonder why. I don't wonder why. They know why. Because the talent is here and the freedom is here. Then it'll remain so.
So you had a conversation about AI with Sam Altman of OpenAI and with Elon Musk.
Yeah.
What was the content of that conversation? What's your vision for sort of this very highest of tech, which is artificial intelligence?
Well, first of all, I have a high regard for the people I talk to, okay? I understand that they understand things I don't understand, and I don't pretend to understand everything, but I do understand one thing. I understand that AI is developing at a geometric rate, and mostly in political life and in life in general, people don't have an intuitive grasp of geometric growth. You understand things basically in linear increments. The idea that you're coming up a ski slope is very foreign to people. So they don't understand it, and they're naturally also sort of taken aback by it, because what do you do? Okay? So I think there are several conclusions from my conversations with them and from my other observations that I've been talking about for many years. I'm talking about the need to do this. Well, the first thing is this. There is no possibility of not entering AI with full force. Secondly, there is a need for regulation. Third, it's not clear there will be global regulation. Fourth, it's not clear where it ends up. I certainly cannot say that. Now, you might say, does it come to control us? Okay, that's a question. Does it come to control us? I don't know the answer to that. I think that as one observation that I had from these conversations is, if it does come to control us, that's probably the only chance of having universal regulation, because I don't see anyone. Deciding to avoid the race and cooperate unless you have that threat. Just as 10 years ago, I read a novel. I don't read novels, but I was forced to read one by a scientific advisor. I read history. I read about economics. I read about technology. I just don't read novels. Okay. And this time, follow Churchill. You know, he said, fact is better than fiction. Well, this fiction would become fact. And it was a book, it was a novel about a Chinese-American future cyber war. Mm-hmm. And I read the book in one sitting, called in a team of experts, and I said, all right, let's turn Israel into one of the world's five superpowers, and let's do it very quickly. And we did, actually. We did exactly that. I think AI is bigger than that and related to that, because it'll affect, well, cyber affects everything, but AI will affect it even more fundamentally, and the joining of the two could be very powerful. So I think in Israel, we have to do it anyway for security reasons, and we're doing it. But I think, what about our databases that are already very robust on the medical records of 98% of our population? Why don't we stick a genetic database on that? Why don't we do other things that could bring magical, are seemingly magical cures and drugs and medical instruments for that? That's one possibility. We have it in, as I said, in every single field. The conclusion is this. We have to move on AI. We are moving on AI, just as we moved on cyber. And I think Israel will be one of the leading one of the leading AI powers in the world. The questions I don't have an answer to is, where does it go? How much does it eat, chew up on jobs? There's an assumption that I'm not sure is true, that all previous, the two big previous revolutions in the human condition, namely the agricultural revolution and the industrial revolution, definitely produced more jobs than they consumed. Okay? That is not obvious to me at all. And the second question you have is, suppose you solve that problem and you deliver money, okay, to those who are not involved in the AI economy. What do they do? The first question you ask somebody whom you just met after the polite, the polite exchanges is, what do you do? Mm-hmm. Right? Well, people define themselves by their profession. And it's going to be difficult if you don't have a profession. And, you know, people will spend more time self-searching, they'll more time in the arts, more time in leisure. I understand that. If I have to bet, it will annihilate many more jobs than it will create, and it will force a structural change in our economics, in our economic models, and in our politics. And I'm not sure where it's going to go.
First of all, I do believe, maybe naively, that it will create more jobs than it takes.
Write that down and we'll check it.
It's on record.
And you know, we don't say we'll check it after our lifetime. No, we'll see it in a few years.
We'll see it in a few years.
So I think, in practical terms, I think we'll make Israel a formidable AI power. We understand the limitation of scale, computing power, and other things. But I think within those limits, I think we can make here this miracle that we did in many other things. We do more with less. I don't care if it's water, the production of water, or the production of energy, or the production of knowledge, or the production of cyber capabilities, defense, and other. We just do more with less. And I think in AI, we're going to do a lot more with a relatively small but highly gifted population. Very gifted.
What you're seeing on the screen right now is not real. This was completely generated with Unreal Engine 5. Quite impressive and scary, of course. Like The Matrix or something like that. The only giveaway was computer-generated smoke. It looks a bit off. But look, they even generated people in the background casually doing their thing.
Following is a conversation with Mark Zuckerberg inside the metaverse. Mark and I are hundreds of miles apart from each other in physical space, but it feels like we're in the same room because we appear to each other as photorealistic Kodak avatars in 3D with spatial audio. This technology is incredible, and I think it's the future of how human beings connect to each other in a deeply meaningful way on the internet. These avatars can capture many of the nuances of facial expressions that we humans use to communicate emotion to each other. Now, I just need to work on upgrading my emotion expressing capabilities of the underlying human. This is the Lex Fridman Podcast. And now, dear friends, here's Mark Zuckerberg. This is so great. Lighting change? Wow.
We can put the light anywhere.
And it doesn't feel awkward to be really close to you.
No, it does. I actually moved you back a few feet before you got into the headset. You were like right here.
I don't know if people can see this, but this is incredible. The realism here is just incredible. Where am I? Where are you, Mark? Where are we?
You're in Austin, right?
No, I mean this place where we're shrouded by darkness with ultra realistic face, and it just feels like we're in the same room. This is really the most incredible thing I've ever seen. And sorry to be in your personal space.
I mean,
we have done jiu-jitsu before.
Yeah, no, I was commenting to the team before that even that I feel like we've choked each other from further distances than it feels like we are right now.
I mean, this is just really incredible. I don't know how to describe it with words. It really feels like we're in the same room.
Yeah.
It feels like the future. This is truly, truly incredible. I just wanted to take it in. I'm still getting used to it. It's like, it's you. It's really you. But you're not here with me, right? You're there wearing a headset, and I'm wearing a headset. It's really, really incredible. So what can you describe what it takes currently for us to appear so photorealistic to each other?
Yeah. So, I mean, for background, we both did these scans for this research project that we have at Meta called Codec Avatars. And the idea is that instead of our avatars being cartoony, and instead of actually transmitting a video, what it does is we've sort of scanned ourselves in a lot of different expressions, and we've built a computer model of sort of each of our faces and bodies and the different expressions that we make, and collapse that into a codec that then, when you have the headset on your head, it sees your face, it sees your expression, and it can basically send an encoded version of what you're supposed to look like over the wire. So in addition to being photorealistic, it's also actually much more bandwidth efficient than transmitting a full video, or especially a 3D immersive video of a whole scene like this.
And it captures everything, like the flaws, like to me, the subtleties of the human face, like even the flaws, that's all amazing. It makes you, it makes it so much more immersive. It makes you realize that like perfection isn't the thing that leads to immersion. It's like the little subtle flaws, like freckles and like variations in color and just.
Yeah. Wrinkles.
All stuff asymmetry. About noses. Yeah. Asymmetry. And just the different, like the corners of the eyes, like what your eyes do when you smile, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, eyes are a huge part of it. Yeah, I mean, there's all the studies that most of communication, even when people are speaking, is not actually the words that they're saying, right? It's kind of the expression and all that. So, and we try to capture that with the kind of classical expressive avatar system that we have. That's the kind of more cartoon designed one. You can kind of put those kind of expressions on those faces as well. But there's obviously a certain realism that comes with delivering kind of this photorealistic experience that I don't know. I just think it's really magical. I mean, this gets to kind of the core of what the vision around virtual and augmented reality is, of like delivering a sense of presence as if you're there together, no matter where you actually are in the world. And I mean, this experience, I think, is a good embodiment of that, where it's like, I mean, we're in two completely different states halfway across the country, and it just like, you know, looks like you're just sitting right in front of me. It's pretty wild.
I'm at Whole Foods and I'm about to pay for my groceries with my That's the coolest thing ever.
So this is one of Oprah's favorites. She says it's a miracle fountain of youth and her magic wrinkle cure. So I'm going to put a little on your hand.
I'd do that. Oprah did it.
Yeah, Oprah did it. All right, so here, we're going to rub it right in.
How come it's red?
I'll show you in a sec, Steve. So this is made from growth hormones of human
Look,
foreskin.
The wrinkles have just disappeared. I can't even ball my hand up.
But so it's made from human foreskin. I'm sorry, Steve.
You just sat up here and squirted somebody's private parts in my damn head. What you laughing at?
I'm sorry.
This your last time on the show. This your last time. Not coming up in here and setting up in here. You tell Oprah this, what's on her face?
She knows.
She knows.
She knows. There were a couple protesters about it because they are cells from baby foreskin.
Oh, baby foreskin.
Yeah. That makes it better.
Yeah, that's different. I thought it was some grown-ass man. Okay, does it work?
So yes, human foreskin has actually been used in growth factors. There's a lot of research on it. It's been shown to increase collagen production. It'll fill in all those lines and wrinkles. And Oprah looks great.
Man, I ain't gonna be able to look at Oprah no more. Ago,
yeah.
Kate Blanchett admitted to that Sandra Bullock and her went and got a certain kind of facial in New York when they had some downtime shooting Ocean's 8. So Sandra sat down with Ellen and explained exactly what it was.
Well, it's this way in which one forces through microneedling. It's like a little roller with these, some of you, I think many of you know it, and it pushes through the skin and ruptures the collagen and then boosts it. You look like a burn victim for a day, but then it pushes the
skin. What are you pushing into the skin, Sarah? Sandra?
Sarah?
Carrie? What are you pushing into the skin?
Well, you push in whatever the facialist would like to insert into your pores.
But what is it?
It is an extraction from a piece of skin that came from a young person far, far away, and they somehow figured out how to extract.
It's foreskin from a Korean baby. That's what it is.
Who comes up with this? I don't think. It's not like I'm lying there with little pieces all over my face. It's like.
Who thinks of collecting it having it for, we'll do something with this
and
someday.
And why didn't we come up with that?
Right. It'd be rich.
And so we call it, I call it the penis facial. And I think when you see how good it is to your face, you too will run to your local facialist and say, give me the penis.
Mr. President, I do want to get right to the news of this week.
Sure.
For so many Americans, the terrorism in Boston.
Yeah.
Many people have wondered if it took you right back to 9/11 when you heard it.
Well, at first, I was deeply concerned that there might have been a organized plot. I don't know all the facts. I don't think we all know all the facts. But I was deeply concerned that this could have been, organized, highly organized attack on the country. And it still may be. I don't know the facts, but I do know that it's really hard to protect the homeland. I mean, the those who want to do harm only have to be right one time, and we have to be right 100% of the time.